Appalachia, the word that evokes a whole passel of reactions. Everything from the beauty of a mountaintop to trailer parks, drugs, and about everything in between. The Appalachian Mountains are indeed the oldest mountains in the world. They once towered 30,000 feet into the air. They stretch from eastern Canada through 14 states all the way to Louisiana. The folks who live in these mountains have faced an unending number of tragic and just plain odd happenings that cry out for the telling. Hello, I'm Larry Bentley, and I was born and raised in these very mountains by a family who themselves were born, raised, and lived for generations in the heart of the Appalachian Mountains. Come with me and we'll take a look at some of the unending stories that come from within my beloved mountains. And we'll look through the eyes of an old Appalachian at some outside the area as well. Welcome to Season 4 of Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend. Howdy, my good friends. I sure hope you're doing well today. Thanks again for stopping by. And if you're joining us over on YouTube, just jump right on in there. The water's just fine. So here we go. If you'd been born a few years earlier and he'd actually was west of the Mississippi instead of southwest Virginia, he'd have probably been right up there with the likes of Jesse James or Billy the Kid as one of them legends of the Wild West. But yeah, he was indeed born in southwest Virginia and spelled his first name in a funny way. Kenny Wagner spelled his first name K-I-N-N-I-E, and he was nearly all but forgot about in today's world. But I tell you, folks, he was one of the most feared outlaws across several states, including Virginia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, just to name a few. So grab hold of something and hold on tight whilst I tell you about the outlaw Kenny Wagner. Now, before I started getting this episode together, it had been quite a few years since I heard the name Kenny Wagner. In fact, I was, like most folks from southwest Virginia today, heck, I'd all but forgot about him. Back when I was a little feller, I'd remember my grandpa throwing the name around and talking about some of Mr. Wagner's exploits. Of course, I always thought that there was a good bit of embellishment thrown into it all, but I heard not just from, you know, my grandpa, but any elder person around the area. Now, I'm not sure if they was a telling about Kenny out of a little bit of pride that a hillbilly could pull all that off, or maybe the shame that he actually did. But to make my point, I don't think I'd heard his name since my grandpa died back in the 1980s. Now, he came into the world on February 18th, 1903, near Gate City, Virginia. Like many other mountain boys from their area in those days, and pretty much still yet today, he learned how to shoot quite well while he was a little feller. And by golly, he was downright extraordinary at it. He was so blamed good that he got a job as a sharpshooter showman in a circus by the time he was 16 years old. Now, I don't know how many of you ever seen one of these shows, but extraordinary to me don't even cover it. I saw a man named Paul Across do some of those shows back way back when, and the man was so good that he could throw aspirin tablets up in the air and turn them into goodies powder in just one shot from a .22, and by golly, he was using iron sights, no scope. Not to mention how good he could throw knives. It was just plain unbelievable. In fact, if I hadn't actually seen it from about 15 feet away, I probably still wouldn't believe it today. Oh, and he was a world quick draw champion, too. I read where Kenny Wagner was every bit as good and maybe better. He could toss 5 wallets into the air, draw his sidearm, shoot all 5, and have his gun back in the holster before the pieces hit the ground. Now, that's pretty dang good. After he had enough of the circus life, you know, constant traveling, setting up, tearing down, and rinse and repeat, his criminal inclinations crawled up out of the closet and took him over like a COVID virus. Now, he headed south to Mississippi, where I reckon he must have thought that he could get by with being a gangster a whole lot easier down there or something, maybe. Or maybe he just thought that Mississippi needed an Al Capone in that part of the country, and he was just the man for the job. So, of course, that led to setting himself up a nice moonshining bootlegging enterprise. He was doing both. You know, he was making it and he's delivering it because he wasn't about to leave any of that illegal liquor money on the table. Now, one source says that a deputy sheriff was corrupt and involved in moonshining and bootlegging. In fact, was involved with Kenny and his enterprise. Now, from what I gather on it, the deputy found out that the feds were watching for the moonshiners to round them up about them parts, which made the deputy about as nervous as a cat on a hot tin roof. So he come up to Mr. Wagner with a watch and some money that he said belonged to a friend of his and asked Kenny if he would hold them for him for a spell. And of course, Kenny said that he would. He'd be glad to. Next time he saw the deputy was when he was pounced on, arrested, and charged with possession of stolen goods. Yeah, that's right. The watch and money was stolen. Or at least that's what they claim. Good enough to get Kenny in jail. So now, Kenny might be doing wrong, but flat out do something like that to him, well, I guess you could say it didn't sit too well with the young man. It got his hillbilly dander up, sure, and he sure enough had enough hair for quite a bit of dander to fit in, which made the 6'3", 260-pound Kenny fit to be tied. And it's a fair bet that the sheriff didn't know with whence he'd messed over. So Kenny promptly overpowered a guard and escaped on horseback with a mad posse on his tail. And on Christmas Eve, 1924, they trailed him to a cabin where he killed a deputy named Murdoch McIntosh. Now, Deputy McIntosh had joined the posse with what all had the gall to think they were going to try to take Kenny back to jail. Oh, and it's said that Deputy McIntosh was the deputy that gave Kenny the watch and the money that he was arrested for in the first place. Now, that's when Kenny jumped back on his horse and in front of the stunned posse, and they all opened fire on him, and he hightailed it for a place he knew a little bit better, back to the Appalachian Mountains, where he arranged to meet his sister and a few friends along the Long Island of the Holston River in Kingsport. Now, that's a place where the Holston River forks apart for a spell, then runs back together, leaving what's by definition an island in the middle of the river. Of course, that plan didn't work out either. The police got a call that there was some lewd behavior taking place down on the island and sent about 5 officers to break it up. Needless to say, it wasn't what they thought it was, as they interrupted a picnic that Kenny and his sister and a few friends were having and ended up in a gunfight where Kenny killed John Smith of the Kingsport Police Department along with Deputy Hubert Webb and critically injured Deputy George Frazier, who it was said ended up dying a short time later. Now, I'm not sure that he did, as there was also reports that he recovered too. Now, Kenny jumped up, right back on another horse and lit out for the mountains until the horse couldn't go anymore. Then he headed off on foot. Now, Kenny was known as Kenny the Cop Killer, and that means that since the shit got real with the police, shit was about to get real for the young Mr. Wagner. So, the day after he shot that shootout, Kenny shows up at a general store in Waycross, Virginia. Now, Waycross is more of an area that people refer to than an actual named town. It was just west of Gate City on the Virginia-Tennessee border. If you were crossing into one of the two states from the other, it was your Waycross. Now, that's where Kenny tells the store owner to call the law. He was ready to surrender. Well, that's the report he says anyway. What actually happened was a little more complicated than that. I think the store owner had to talk him into it, but nonetheless, yeah, you can bet your hindquarters that the police showed up with more than 5 officers this time and pounced on, arrested, cuffed, and stuffed Kenny Wagner fast enough to make his head swim. He was probably in jail before the store owner hung the phone up. And with it being the 1920s, the whole thing came with the complimentary ass-whipping administered in a orderly or maybe disorderly fashion, just as long as it was thorough and efficient. I guess they were good with it. But he was housed in Sullivan County Jail for safekeeping until they could get him a trial date, which, well, Kenny didn't intend to stick around for anyway. He made a run for it before they could get the particulars worked out. Of course, he wasn't out long before they drug him back, and I guess he didn't have an access to a gun this time, or there might have been even more people killed. He was finally tried for the murders of the 2 law officers, which is another indication to me that Deputy Frazier survived. And he was convicted and sentenced to death in the electric chair in Tennessee. The Tennessee had just built old Sparky out of the wood that they had left over when they tore down the hanging gallows back in 1913, because neck stretching got to be just way too ugly to put up with anymore. Folks, you ain't heard nothing yet. This Kenny feller's just getting started up. Now stick around, you're listening to Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend with Larry Bentley. Now, just after Kenny was sentenced to death in the electric chair, his lawyers put in an appeal and on the conviction, and by golly, they won. I'm not sure exactly what the appeal was about, but Kenny's conviction was overturned and a new trial was scheduled. Now, by the time the new trial date came, Kenny Wagner was nowhere to be found. He'd escaped the Blountfield jail and headed for parts unknown. He'd been working on a prisoner road crew when he and a couple of other guys overpowered a guard as they was getting ready to be put back in their cell, and they went on the run. After the escape, Kenny ran southwest. In fact, all the way to Mexico. That's where he got a reboot on life and a chance to start over fresh. Changed his name to Harvey Logan and was known about the area as Texas Slim. He took the golden opportunity of the new life and put together a gang of outlaws and started robbing trains and banks. Yeah, he didn't learn anything, did he? I couldn't find anything on whether or not he killed anybody down there, but by August of 1926, he'd apparently wore out his welcome in Mexico, too, and was running the streets of Texarkana, Arkansas, and hanging with the Carper brothers, Sam, Will, and Bob. Those three distinguished gentlemen were considered to be about equal to that sludge that builds up on the bottom of the manure wagon by most folks of the area. Now, on August 17th, 1926, Tex and the Carper boys did the town like they did pretty much every night and went back to the E.P. Williams farm where they'd been staying near Folk, Arkansas, you know, where they see all them ugly monsters down around Boggy Creek. Now, they hadn't done enough, so they settled in to play some cards. It was about 4 in the morning when, well, the Carper boys were left flopping around on the ground with bullet holes in them from special delivery made by Texas Slim. Now, two of the brothers, Sam and Will, died from the wounds while Bob and his was left near death. So having worn out his welcome one more time, Kenny made a run for it with another posse hot on his trail. This time, the posse was led by Sheriff Lily Barker, whose husband, who happened to be the sheriff at the time, had been killed in a shootout a few months earlier, and by golly, she was appointed to take his place by a governor, you know. So now she was sheriff. The posse caught up with Kenny, and he surrendered directly to Lily, who took him to jail in the Miller County lockup until they could decide what to do with him. Kenny said that once he saw the sheriff was a lady, he surrendered because he might do a whole lot of things, but fighting or hurting a woman ain't one of them. Now, it seems that the sheriff took a shine to Kenny, too, because no charges were filed in the death of the Carper boys, as, from what I've read, most of the town folk thought that Kenny did him a favor by getting rid of him. But there was one thing that Sheriff Lilly couldn't help Kenny with, and that was the fact that he'd still wanted Mississippi for the murder of a Deputy Sheriff McIntosh. Now, in fairly short order, he was back in Mississippi on trial, and folks, all that happened while it was still 1926. They didn't mess around back then. Now, he was convicted and sent to Mississippi's Parchman Prison for the rest of his natural life. Now, Parchman was right up there with Angola in Louisiana when it come to the worst possible places to be locked up in the U.S. Now, Kenny must have been some kind of a Pied Piper when he came to doing time, because for long he was a trustee and was put in charge of training the bloodhounds used to track escaped prisoners. Now, once he even went out with the dogs on an escape hunt, working all by himself on horseback, and by golly, they even gave him a rifle, and he brought the escaped man back. Now, I don't know how many of you smelled this one coming, but in 1940, he went out on another escapee hunt, and he just kept riding, didn't come back. Of course, the prison officials didn't think he'd go too far, since he'd had a heart attack back in 1936, so they weren't thinking he'd be on the run for long. The FBI begged to differ and put him on its 10 most wanted list. He'd ran back to the mountains of Virginia and Tennessee, where he was most at home, and that's where they caught up to him in 1943. Now, the FBI agents said they just happened to see him riding in a car by pure chance and pulled the car over. When they did, Kenny leaped out of the car, squeezed off a couple of rounds from a revolver, and hightailed it for the underbrush. Now, a couple of bursts from an FBI Tommy gun later, and Kenny Wagner came out, got into the agent's car, and was on his way back to prison. He had enough sense to know, you know, that when he was outgunned. Now, Kenny had left two high-powered rifles, four handguns, in the car, aside from the one he had with him when he ran for it. Now, the driver of the car was left to go about his business after that. Now, back at Parchman Prison, believe it or not, Kenny talked his way back into his old bloodhound trainer job. This time, he did that job a little bit different. He taught the dogs not to follow his scent, and eventually the Parchman bloodhounds would track anybody under the sun but Kenny Wagner. It's unbelievable how much the warden trusted Kenny. He was given 10 leaves of absence from Parchman to visit his folks back in Virginia, completely unescorted. What I'm reading in most sources anyway. I didn't find a paper trail on that, and probably wouldn't be one if people heard about it. So apparently the man could sell water to a drowning man. But so, as we all know by now, Kenny was gone by 1948. He did the same thing he did last time by running back to the mountains, and no, the bloodhounds didn't chase him. They ran around in circles like they were lost. After the escape, he finally ended up living quietly back in, of all places, a small town in Mississippi called Wahalik, which was about 180 miles from Parchman Prison. This time, he managed to eke out a decent little living for himself. He raised and trained some of the best dogs people had ever seen and made his living doing that for, about 7 years. He was known to the local folks as Big Jim the Dog Man. Until somebody recognized him, turned him into the Mississippi State Police, and they came a-calling in 1956. Now, by then, Kenny was pretty much a weakling from his heart problems and said that he was kind of glad to be going back to Parchman Prison because he could get better medical care there. Of course, they put him right back in his trustee position again, if you can believe that. And in 1958, he had another heart attack and went to the prison hospital. He was on the mend on March 9th when he wanted to show somebody one of the puppies that he was raising there at the prison. Now, I've read that somebody was a guard, and I've read that somebody was actually the warden. That's why I say somebody. It was the somebody with authority to let Kenny go to the dog kennels when he was supposed to be on strict bed rest to try to heal up, and I can at least tell you that much. Now, when Kenny bent down to pick up the puppy, he had another heart attack right there in Parchman Prison, and he died. At the time of his death, Kenny was regretting his violent life. He said that he'd come from a broken home that really didn't give him any guidance to avoid crime. He wanted to devote the rest of his life to helping young people see the right from wrong so they wouldn't make the mistakes he made. Kenny was taken back to Scott County Funeral Home, where about 15,000 people attended his wake and funeral on March 12, 1958. He was buried in Mountain View Cemetery, which you might see called Wood Cemetery, there in Scott County, about 4 miles outside of his hometown near Gate City. Now, Kenny was just 55 years old when he had shoehorned a whole bunch of living into that life. Now, if you like the story, folks, please rate and review the podcast, and don't forget to follow on whatever podcatcher you're listening on. If you're watching on YouTube, click that like button and don't forget to subscribe, please. Now, don't worry, the videos will get better. I'm kind of slow when it comes to technology, but we'll get there. Come on over to Facebook group Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend Podcast, where we talk Appalachian or about anything else you want to talk about. I'll be back real soon with another Appalachian Murder, Mystery, or Legend, and I will see you then.